Hare Krishna. Religion and spirituality. That's what I plan to speak on now. A commonly heard in America these days is that I am spiritual but not religious. You heard that, Deva Krishna? Common saying. What does this mean? What are the implications of this? It's a very important statement. It's not just some motto. To even consider the spiritual, the religious, it's a very grave question. A lot of people, they just don't even think about it at all. To consider the spiritual or the religious, whichever way you take it, means to presume, to accept that beyond this day-to-day existence that we all perceive, that we're all part of, that we all, to a large extent, can't escape, there is existence and another platform altogether. And it points to life beyond death. So these are questions that many people, they don't even think about, they don't want to think about, and some people, if it's brought to their attention, they completely reject it and say that, well, I don't believe that, just you live and then you die and then it's all finished. Unfortunately, many of the people who say they are religious and many of the people who say that they're spiritual, people who say they're religious and spiritual, spiritual, not religious, they also don't think very deeply about it. Most people who are religious, of course, you could say I'm speaking from subjective perspective here, but you can accept it if you like and not if you don't like. Most people who are religious do so without thinking very deeply about it because they're born into some religious system or other, they accept it. Or they accept it because they have some troubles in their life and then they feel some need for some religion in their life. What some persons who call themselves psychologists calls religion as an emotional crutch. And many people who call themselves spiritual, from what I've seen also, they also don't make a very deep investigation into it. And there may be even the thought that, well, if it's spiritual, you can't really make a deep investigation into it anyway. How can you, how much can you know? It's not like studying in the university worms or butterflies or mathematical formulae or the history of Louisiana or any such thing. It's not something that you can investigate in a normal academic way. It's just something that you feel. Often it's thought that spirituality is something that, it's not something that can be ordered or structured, it's just something that you intuit. And therefore, many people, they like to separate spirituality from religion, because religion is organized, and many people also say that, I don't like organized religion. So religion is organized, but spiritual consciousness is beyond any such worldly dimensions. As soon as you have an organization, it's something to do with the world. There's authority structures and rules, and these don't seem very spiritual. Authority structures and rules, that's what you get in the world. That's what you get in a family, in schools, in a workplace, in the army, the government. It's all to do with authority, structure, and rules. So that's there in any organization, including religious organizations. So how can that be spiritual? And often we see that a religion doesn't seem to be very spiritual. As many people have noted, either accurately or inaccurately, that religion is the cause of so many problems in the world, and especially so many wars, and so much division between people. Right now, the hot item in the news is that some Hare Krishna. Some amateur movie made in California a few months ago, which is anti-Islamic, and the predictable violent reaction to that. So, if this is all caused by religion, wouldn't it be better to have no religion? It would seem like that. As John Lennon famously sung, imagine in his song, he was imagining a world in which all the people live as one. And one of the conditions he said for that was no religion too. He was talking about, or singing about, a utopian world in which there's no religion. Things would be much better without religion. Of course, he was also a believer. He sung a big long song about what he didn't believe in. Maybe you heard that, if there are fans of John Lennon here. Many fans of John Lennon. Do you ever hear that song? I don't believe in Hitler. Du, 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 du. I went on for about... I only heard it once. Once was enough for me. Then it finished with, I don't believe the Bible. Du, 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 du. I went on and on and on. And at the end, I just believe in me. There's more. Yoko and me, that's reality. So I thought, wow, this is egoism gone beyond all limits. Anyway, there's a side comment about the spiritual, maybe, but not definitely not religious, John Lennon. Imagining a world in which everything is very nice, and one of the conditions for that is no religion. So, religion, especially as it's known in the Western world, to many, what we hope are thinking, intelligent people, just the very word religion sounds like something with a bad taste, just like something like when people say the word school to me, and I think back all those years when I was at school, it's just, ugh. Ugh. Just something, ugh. So religion, oh, oh no. God, oh, the God, that, ah, oh, some nasty old guy sitting in the sky chucking people into hell. Oh. So it sounds like something very, very undesirable, but spiritual, that sounds very nice. Spiritual, in which we're another dimension, ecstatic, no school, no having to go to work, no obstacles, no barriers, just spiritual, not very defined. What does spiritual mean? Well, if we look at history, the history of this world, there have been many spiritual people, and mostly they've not been appreciated by religious people. It's a long history of spiritual people. Jesus Christ, he didn't say, I have come to found Christianity, but he was actually a rebel against the religious orthodoxy of the time. There have been mystics, we could say, all over the world who were just, they didn't really fit in with the world all around them. About William Blake, his wife said, well, I don't really know my husband, he's in paradise all the time. So he was officially a member of the Church of England, but he was quite outspoken against much of what the church stood for. He was a, what we could say, a very spiritual. He appeared to be a very spiritual person. So such people, they come from time to time. In the Western world, they've always been considered with some suspicion. People who are naturally mystical, naturally unattached to this world, naturally not interested in money, name, fame, all this kind of thing, controlling others, exploiting others, but just interested in the higher dimension of existence, which they talk about, but often in such ways that it's very difficult to understand what they're talking about, because it's more experiential than empiric. There's another kind of mystic also, theistic mystic. There was one kind of mystic, they talk of an existence, a reality that's undefined, that's we merge our consciousness into. And there's another kind of mystic that speaks of God and his, not God as generally understood in Western religion, as a demanding autocratic figure, but God as the sweetest, most beautiful person who we have an intimate link of pure love with. So there have been such mystics. And actually, if we look at this culturally, historically, what we would call the religious ethos of the East, and especially of India, has always encouraged, or has been the natural, that's considered the highest point of religious or spiritual understanding, is to come to that platform where one is completely absorbed in thought of God all the time. And actually that's also the highest teaching of Bhagavad Gita, which is sometimes called the Bible of Hinduism, although it's not a very accurate term, but it gives some idea of the importance of Bhagavad Gita within what is called Hindu religion, which is very difficult to define exactly what is Hinduism. It's not exactly an organized religion in the sense that we have in the Western world. There are many reasons for that, that it's not so much a history-based religion, that some person came at some point in time and said something and taught something and you all have to believe exactly that. But rather it's a system in which in every generation there are spiritually advanced teachers who minister to the, to whoever comes forward. And there are many different kinds of teachings within the whole body, within the of what is loosely called Hinduism. But it's recognized, recognized that spiritually advanced people are those who are like that, detached from the world, who, this is all described in Bhagavad Gita, yeah, how someone is udasin, there's nothing no real interest in anything in this world. There are many descriptions. Samalostasma kanchana. He sees a stone and gold all as the same. Who is of steady consciousness in sukha and dukkha. Sukha means if you get opportunities for happiness, you don't become particularly elated. And if one is in a difficult situation, one doesn't become depressed. One's consciousness remains steady. And the ultimate stage that Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is the speaker of Bhagavad Gita, is manmana, always absorbed in me, always thinking of me. When one's consciousness is fully absorbed in Krishna, that is the perfection of yoga. So, is it necessary to be religious to be spiritual? Well, for those who are fully on the spiritual platform, there's nothing for them to do or to follow. They don't have to follow any teachings or rules or regulations because they're already in full spiritual consciousness. Show me that Vamsidas book. And one of the books which I've compiled. This is a photo of a fully self-realized person. Not sure exactly when he was born. He left this world, when was it, about 1944, something like that. No, he lived in the world but had no consciousness of it practically. He wouldn't talk to anyone except his deity. That means the form of Krishna, who he carried with him everywhere and spoke to as his child. His behavior was so unusual that in any culture less spiritually enlightened than India's, he almost certainly would have been considered crazy. Although physically present in this world, he had little connection with it. And actually, in Krishna consciousness, the highest perfection is to be crazy. Bishoye amare pagala bolaya ongete dibe kadhuli. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He sang a song. This is very interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur lived at the same time. He passed away just over 100 years ago. And he was outwardly seeming a very materialistic person. He was a magistrate in the British government at a time when in India, the educated class of people, who of course in modern America, there's not that much difference because everyone goes to school, but in India at that time, there's a very great difference between the educated class and those who weren't educated. Most people were illiterate. So he was a magistrate, means he was cooperating with the government, and most people, especially in Bengal, where he was from, the educated class, they were against the British, but he was cooperating with the British by working for the government. And being a magistrate is a very, what you call, establishment, straight kind of thing to be, right? It's about as straight as you can get. Of course, they can also take bribes. But, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wasn't like... So he was a very orthodox person externally, but he wrote these lines I just quoted, that he was praying that the highest perfection of my life, please don't put on the highest perfection of my life is that I will be so much crazy in spiritual consciousness that materialistic people thinking me crazy, they will throw mud on me. Just seeing as some kind of disturbance. So he was praying for that opportunity. He sung many such songs. He was a great poet. He would do his job as a magistrate, finish it all quickly, come back and write hundreds of books and poems. All we wouldn't know from his external life, but from his work as a magistrate. But he was fully wrapped in ecstasy of love of Krishna, of just unimaginable level. So he wrote so many poems of love of Krishna and so many philosophical works. And although he was wrapped in pure ecstasy of love of Krishna, he also started an organization for propagating this. Now that's very interesting. Well, how can you propagate spirituality? It's just something that happens, isn't it? One person takes it up and then someone's attracted to them and they can become their disciple. Well, as soon as you have disciple, you have religion, isn't it? There's some organization, there's Disciple means discipline. There are some things to be followed. So how do you get spirituality? Well, some people have suggested that you approach a guru and the guru just touches you and then you become... There's actually a term for it, shaktipat, which means to be imbued with energy all of a sudden. But these are more like folk stories, actually. I mean, in real life, it's a nice idea. But in real life, though we may desire to be spiritual, there are various obstacles to our actually achieving a pure spiritual platform. These are also discussed in Bhagavad Gita. And the basic obstacles are, they're described, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. These are, kama means material desire. Anger, krodha, anger, lobha, greed, illusion, pride, and envy. So we may feel ourselves to be spiritual, but it's not so easy to get rid of material desires or even to identify what they are. They may be very subtle and deep within our consciousness. Vedic psychology describes that at every moment we are seeing, touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, consciously or subliminally. And everything we touch, taste, smell, feel, hear, plus everything we think of, creates an impression in our consciousness, which remains there. That's called the sanskara. And in this way, our consciousness is being formed all the time. We have a vast impression of within our consciousness. We have unlimited thoughts which have registered there since our birth and even from before our birth, within the womb, from previous lives. So, to achieve our actual spiritual consciousness means to become free from all of this contamination. There's material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. What does that mean, actually? Spiritual consciousness means to be aware of our spiritual existence. It's not just some vague term that we can feel or we can somehow achieve it just by reading a few books about it. But there is an actual meaning to the term spirit, that we are by nature all spiritual beings. What does that mean? Well, material means everything in this world is limited, temporary, and not knowing. We know something. We may know that, for instance, Louisiana is a state within the United States of America. But the really important things, who are we? Why is there suffering in this world? How can we achieve pure bliss? How can we be free from birth and death? We don't know. So the spiritual consciousness, the nature of the spirit, that is called Atma, is Satchitananda. The nature of the Atma is eternal. We never die. The body dies. There are so many bodies here. No body here is more than 100 years old. But we all existed 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 1,000,000 years ago, 1,000,000,000,000 years ago. That's a long time. Can you imagine where you were 1,000,000,000,000 years? You can't even imagine 1,000,000,000,000 years. But in eternity, it's nothing. And we will continue to exist after 100 years. After 100 years, we won't be. Whatever body you're in now, every body here will be dead. Every body will be dead in 100 years. But no one here will be dead. Does that make sense? Everybody will be dead, but no one will be dead. Because we are not the body. No one will be dead in 100 years, 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years, 1,000,000,000 years, zillion years. Because the soul is eternal. And the soul is in a condition of, the natural condition of the soul is to be full bliss. But at the moment, we're in this material existence, and because we have material desires which form material attachments, and we, due to the impressions that come within our mind, there's a constant cycle of material desire that goes on, and this binds us to the material world. So, spiritual life means the training that is required to become free from the material condition and to come to the spiritual condition, the zenith of which is, as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, manmana, always thinking of Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakta. Krishna gives the instruction, always think of me, become my devotee, madhyaji, worship me, Maam namaskaru, bow down to me. So we may think, well, if we're becoming spiritual, then why do we have to worship anyone? Why do we have to bow down to anyone? And that's because Krishna is supreme. That is a condition of reality that we may not like it, but that is the actual fact that we are. Although we are spiritual by nature, that doesn't mean that we are supreme. That is a common error of thinking that when I come to spiritual consciousness, I shall understand myself to be supreme. And many people teach that, but it's a meaningless teaching. Because if we're supreme, then how do we get in this mess anyway in the first place? How do we forget that we're supreme? We are controlled. We don't like to die. We are forced to die. We are of in a situation that we didn't choose to come into. So to come to spiritual consciousness means to become free from that which binds us to birth and death in this material world. But that doesn't mean that we become God. We are by nature of the nature of God, but we are not this supreme reality. Supreme reality is Krishna. So these are all lessons in spiritual life that one has to learn. Spiritual life means that there is training, there is discipline. You may say, sounds like religion. Well, religion, and you may have a bad taste from that term. And religion, ultimately, that should lead us to the spiritual condition. That it doesn't means that religion, most religions, they get hijacked along the way, or they lose their purpose. Or the attempt to guide people along the spiritual path gets lost. It's a common phenomenon that highly spiritual people come in this world. They attract many followers. That requires some organization. I mean, even if there are many people come, some organization is required even to feed them. If you say, well, we're just all spiritual, they're not religious, and then you just, well, Jesus isn't always there to turn the fishes and loaves into enough for everyone. So some practical organization is needed. A practical organization means those who are of the leadership type or the bossy type, they tend to take control. And where there's organization means there's some power, some money, and then the wrong kind of people come and they take charge, or the people who come originally with a spiritual intent, they take charge and then they become diverted. And then, because ultimate spirituality is very high attainment, which most people are far away from, then you may tend to water down the whole philosophical understanding, and it becomes a mundane religion. So there's a very great danger in there. But on the other hand, there's a very great danger in any organization. But on the other hand, without any organization, without any system of any kind, then training, which means there must, training means systematic, step by step, going from one step to another. That cannot be there. We've heard of the guru with one or two disciples in the cave or in the forest, and it all sounds very idyllic, but it may not be very practical for everyone. If many people come, then how to teach them. Another point is that we are all spiritual beings, there should be a spiritual process which is suitable for everyone. However materialistic we may be, if we're all spiritual beings, if someone has actually come to the level of spiritual consciousness, they should be able to inspire others and guide others to come to a higher platform. So that requires some system, and the system of yoga is meant for that. By yoga, generally people understand some bodily exercises and maybe some meditation, but the term yoga is used repeatedly in Bhagavad Gita. And it simply means to link. So to link our consciousness with the Supreme. And there are various methods for doing that, of which the bodily exercise yoga is only the beginning part of a much more complex system. But because people in the modern age very interested in their bodies, which is not very spiritual to be very interested in one's body. So this form of yoga has become popular. Mostly people think yoga is for some bodily benefit, but that's just some exercises, that's all. That in itself is not spiritual. There are other systems of yoga also, which are described in Bhagavad Gita, such as karma yoga. Karma means work. Generally, people think that karma means, what have you got there? Good karma. So karma means the reactions to one's previous activities. But that's, more precisely, that's called karma phal, or the fruit, literally the fruit of one's work. And karma means action. So how by one's actions one can link with the Supreme. Jnana yoga means the yoga of knowledge. How by studying the Vedic texts, Veda means knowledge, how by studying the Vedic texts one can understand one's spiritual position. Then dhyana yoga, the yoga of meditation. So there are various systems of yoga which are described. Krishna consciousness means bhakti yoga, or the yoga of devotion. That is described in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna as the best of all yogas. Now, of course, everyone will say, well, our path is the best. But we're only saying what Krishna says. And Krishna is described as Yogeshwara, or the master, or the master of all yoga. So Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, yoginam api sarvesham madgatenam tarana shadhavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. Krishna says, after describing various systems of yoga, Krishna says that of all yogis, the best is that yogi who worships me with great faith and whose whole being is completely absorbed in me. So this is bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, in which we understand. Understanding is there. There's some academic teaching is there. Not exactly like in school. Ultimately, yoga is experiential, but there is teaching also of who is Krishna, what is our relationship with him, how we can develop that relationship. We all have it. We all are spiritual beings, which means we all have an eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. So ultimately, some, you can call it religion, is required to come to the spiritual platform. There are some people who, due to advancement in previous lives, are born very spiritually advanced. There are some people who, it's understood, they come from the platform of spiritual consciousness and are born in this world to help others come to the platform of spiritual consciousness. So these people, they don't need to follow any religious process because they're already spiritually advanced. But for others, some kind of guidance and instruction is required. So some kind of organization is required. So you can call that religion. Religion doesn't have to be a pejorative term if it's conducted properly. So we may say that, well, what's going on here? This all looks very materialistic. You see, it's a nice room with nice chandelier, very beautifully decorated. And how can it be spiritual? How can it be spiritual? There's money, organization, seems to be more like a religion than something spiritual. Well, bhakti yoga means devotion to Krishna. So all the best things should be offered to Krishna. There's nothing wrong with having nice things. But one should not think this belongs to me. One should think everything for Krishna. So devotees of Krishna, they can live in a comfortable building, but for the sake of serving Krishna. A devotee of Krishna can collect millions of dollars and use it all for serving Krishna. Just like after this talk, we want to distribute to everyone vegetarian food, not exactly, more than vegetarian. Karma-free food, not only karma-free, not only is the food karma-free, but it's full of bhakti, spiritual food. So that's also required, that in this country, most traders are not so pious that they'll just give food. In India, at least up to the present day, the rice merchants, if you go at the time of the rice harvest, they all like to give some rice to the temple. If we go to the market, the people selling vegetables, they like to give. They think it's very good that we should give vegetables and fruit and all these things to the temple. But in America so far, most traders are not so pious in this way. So we have to purchase. That means money. So then we have to take money. If we take money, then we become materialistic. What do you think? If we spend it for Krishna, that's not materialistic. It's more spiritual to be able to take a big pile of dollar notes and use it all for Krishna. That means one has no personal attachment for that. Than to say, no, I can't touch it. that means that one doesn't know the proper use of it. Just like if someone drops their wallet in the street, someone will think, well, someone will come and say, hey, that's great, stick it in his own pocket and run away, so no one will see him. Someone else will see it and say, it's not mine, I can't touch it. It's better. The best person takes it, finds the owner, and gives it to the owner. So, in Krishna consciousness, we want to utilize everything of the world for Krishna without any personal attachment to it, and in this way, execute bhakti yoga, or the yoga of devotion to Krishna. There's a fully spiritual activity which everyone can participate in bhakti yoga, without any previous practice, no difficult yoga practices, no difficult philosophy to understand. Everyone can partake in it and immediately come to the spiritual platform. That is the chanting of the Maha Mantra. Is mantra yoga. Mantra means a sound vibration from the spiritual plane. There are many sound vibrations from the material plane. Thank you for demonstrating it, but kindly turn off your cell phone. There you go. For instance, one could chant Coca-Cola, 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 on and on and on. You wouldn't get any spiritual benefit whatsoever, and you'd probably get fed up of it after some time. But a mantra, the very evidence that it's spiritual, is that you can chant it repeatedly, and you don't get tired of chanting it. Rather, because you get spiritual juice from it, you get more enlivenment. And that's especially true of the Maha Mantra. Maha means great. So this is the great, the greatest mantra, and that is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the central spiritual activity is chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. And that will keep everything pure. Otherwise, it's very dangerous to have big buildings, big organization, big money. And then we may think, maybe get a big head also and go to hell. And everything will be spoiled. But there are rules, religious rules. Everyone must rise early. Spiritual life means early in the morning, not sleeping till 9 o'clock. In any tradition, you'll find all over the world, you must be rising before dawn. That is the time when everything is peaceful, the air is very pure, the best time for spiritual practices. So here, every morning at 4:30 in the morning, the chanting starts. It goes on and on. And all throughout the world, wherever there are centers of the Krishna conscious movement, chanting. This chanting will keep everything pure. So, for actual spirituality, there has to be some spiritual instruction, some spiritual organization. How to maintain the purity without becoming a mundane religion. Well, that will require dedication, purity of practice, and a lot of chanting of Hare Krishna. That will keep everything pure. And what is the perfection of spiritual life? If when one is absorbed in chanting Krishna's name, when one has a natural attraction, one doesn't chant, okay, 4:30, it's time to chant. But one is all the time, 24 hours absorbed in chanting, 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 internally, externally. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, always think of me. And the best way to think of Krishna is to chant his holy names. So, one can be spiritual, and if you don't like to be religious, well, don't go toward that which is simply hypocritical in the name of religion. But don't also just be spiritual in name only. Do try to find out that path which will genuinely bring you to the spiritual platform. If you only feel spiritual, but you don't have any spiritual practices, if we can be honest and say that, well, I don't really know what spiritual life is, if we're still attached to anything in this material world, even thinking I'm American, that's mundane, because the body is temporary. Your next body probably won't be American. Could be anywhere else in the universe. Could be born anywhere else. So if we have any material attachments, if we can't control our senses, if we are drawn toward, we can't control our eating, we can't control our sexual impulses, then we're not on the spiritual platform. If we have any material desires, then we need guidance. We need a process that will purify us practically. So this we are offering here. And if you like, you can take it. And if you don't, you don't have to. It's up to you, of course. But we invite everyone to join with us in chanting Hare Krishna and to take prasada, which means Krishna's mercy in the form of spiritual food. So it's a very nice form of yoga. Even if you don't like anything else, you can just eat and make spiritual advancement. So that's very good. All right, that's all I'll say now. More talking later. Talking should go on and on. Talk about Krishna. Oh, I said that they said there are going to be time for some questions also. So if there are any questions. Yes, please.
Yeah. You see, what I understand, if you have God, who can control the thinking about Krishna, who actually communication with the people everywhere, then you need to get attached with people. As long as you see Krishna everywhere and in the person, I think that is also spiritual and not just attached.
All right, very good, thank you. Anything else? Yeah, yeah, use it, then others can hear you.
Maharaj, my question is that we know from Bhagavad Gita that before taking birth in this material world and our destination, like how much wealth and when we'll die, everything already determined or fixed. If that is fixed,
common question.
We cannot change it, so
frequently asked question.
So how will determine that to live our life spiritual life or material life?
Everything is fixed due to destiny. So how can we change that?
Well,
what makes you think that everything is fixed? We are born in a certain situation due to karmic reactions, right? Someone is born with a tall body, someone is born with a short body, someone is born with a healthy body, someone is born with an unhealthy body, someone has a tendency to get tired very easily, someone is always vigorous. We all have different bodies and mentalities, and you can look in your astrological chart and find that you're in your Sharasati or something like this. Now at this period, Mahadasha, you're being influenced by Mars or something like this. So it's all determined by our previous activities. But if everything is destined by our previous activities, well, how did that happen? Because that means that in our previous life we did something to be in the situation we're in here, that we're in now. That means we chose to perform certain activities, right? Otherwise, there'd no be a karmic reaction is a reaction to what we chose to do, right? If there was no choice, then we couldn't call it destiny. Then we'd just be some robots in a cartoon, some figures in a cartoon. We wouldn't be living beings at all. So in a previous life, we also had a certain body according to karmic reactions, but we made certain choices. That means there is destiny or karmic results, and there is independent choice also. Due to what we did in previous lives, we have a certain kind of body in a certain kind of situation, but we also have choices. Now the body I've got, there's not much I can do to change it. Well, I guess nowadays I could go have a sex change operation, or I could inject some hormones, but the basic apparatus is the same. So what I do with it, I'm born in a certain situation, I have so many years to live, but what I do between birth and death, I can choose to chant Hare Krishna, or I can choose to be a chain killer. I can choose to eat vegetarian food, or I can choose to eat non-vegetarian food. We have choices, and according to the choices we make our future situation. So there is destiny and there is choice also. They're not mutually exclusive. Just like, for instance, if you get on a plane, and the plane, say you're going from New Orleans to New York. So once you're on that plane, you're on that plane, and you can't get off it. Your fate, your situation is fixed. But on the plane, you can sleep, talk, yell at the hostess, fiddle with your fingers. There are all kinds of things you could do. I mean, there are some things you can't do also. You can't play golf on a plane, for instance. You could hijack it. Don't even talk about it. You might get arrested. Come on, don't say that. We'll get the whole Hare Krishna movement investigated. The place will be filled with police. Okay, delete that from the tape. So, once you're in that situation on the plane, you can't alter that until you come to the next spot. But what you do within that situation, you have some choice, limited choices. So similarly, just like by making the decision to get on that plane and being accepted for that, you put yourself in a certain situation. Then what you do with it, that's up to you. So similarly, according to what we do, we get a certain situation. What we do with that is up to us. So the idea that everything is fixed by destiny, it's not even a very good proposition, because if everything's fixed by destiny, then how do we make that destiny? We made that destiny by choice. And if everything's absolutely fixed, then we're just figures in a cartoon. But we know we're not. If we're just figures in a cartoon, then just go out and do it, chain killing, and then go to court and say, well, it's all destiny. And they say, okay, well, by destiny, you can. There's a nice electric chair you can sit in. Yeah, any other question? Someone else had a question? Yeah, there was a question before. All right, you got the mic, so we'll pass it back. Yeah, go on. So you had to make a choice, right? It's not all fixed. I had to choose whether to put the mic there or...
It's like
After long practice also, you could see that in devotional life, somebody's like deviating.
Yeah.
Deviating after long practice, like sometimes somebody could see the fallen condition.
Someone deviates after a long time.
Yeah.
Well, we always have choice.
So
Maya, illusion is very strong.
So
that's also discussed in Bhagavad Gita. That someone may deviate, but the very practice that they've done will always be for their benefit. And if someone deviates after practicing yoga, then in the next life they'll take it up. Give the mic over here.
Thank you for the very nice class, Maharaj.
Thank you.
So what would be the difference between, you mentioned that John Lennon wrote a song and certainly influenced so many people, and then you mentioned that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote so many songs. So what would be the difference between the songs for, let's say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the songs written by John Lennon?
The difference between the songs of John Lennon and Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Both have been very influential. John Lennon, very widely so. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, unfortunately, not so widely so. But there is a great difference in quality. Bhaktivinoda Thakur spoke from a level of direct union with Krishna, union in devotional service. He spoke from the platform of divine love of Krishna. Whereas John Lennon, he also had the idea of love. All you need is love. But unfortunately, his idea of love was restricted to a bodily love. He had a love-in, right, with Yoko Ono in Toronto, was it? Somewhere. In a hotel. So he demonstrated love. This was his demonstration against the Vietnam War. Make love, not war. But the idea of love that he was promoting was bodily, physical, sexual love, which actually the first stage of yoga that everyone should know before even doing bodily exercises, but this is not taught in the yoga studios today, that bodily, the sexual attraction between one body and another is the main binding force in material existence. That the main obstacle to actual spiritual advancement is the sexual impulse, which is on the animal platform. So there's a vast difference between, both spoke of love. John Lennon spoke of love, Bhaktivinoda Thakur spoke of love. John Lennon, an idealistic person, no doubt, but devoid of actual spiritual knowledge. He didn't have actual spiritual knowledge. He had the opportunity to take it. Maybe he got discouraged by the fool on the hill. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he followed the ancient system of spiritual enlightenment, of bhakti yoga, and was fully perfect in that. So there's a very great difference. One major difference, and this, of course, this could be a very, very big discussion, between this spirituality practiced in the West nowadays, in what might be called New Age, and the spirituality as practiced in India since time immemorial. Although New Age is loosely derived from Indic religious traditions, a very great difference is the within India the ethos of dharma, in which dharma means just on the... Well, what does dharma mean? That's a big one. But on the basic day-to-day platform, the understanding of dharma gives what we would call basic moral understanding. Whereas spirituality in the West is often misunderstood that if you feel spiritual, there's no need to follow any rules and regulations. And as in the case of Vamsidas Babaji, he didn't follow any rules and regulations of spiritual life, but he's not to be imitated. And even though he didn't follow any rules and regulations of spiritual life, he was not a pervert, he was not a lecher, he had no relationship with women. In the dharmic ethos of India, for someone who is a sadhu, a spiritual or a renounced person, there's no question of relationship with women. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was married, but that is accepted. One can be spiritual and married, but not one cannot be spiritual in the dharmic ethos. It's understood that one cannot be spiritual if someone is engaging in loose sexual relationships. It's not possible. Of course, there's the whole tantra which is there, but anyway, that's in which they deliberately try to do the grossest material activities. But that's not accepted as actual spirituality by those who follow dharma. Big discussions, big questions. So, look, see before you. Don't just take, because someone says something is spiritual and because they talk in some captivating manner, don't accept it very easily. Without sense control, there can be no spiritual advancement. It's relatively easy to speak about high levels of spiritual consciousness. And one can even imagine oneself to be on that platform. But actually, unless we follow a process of spiritual realization given by all the realized masters since time immemorial, then there's no question of getting free from material desire. There has to be some process. One has to understand that material desire, material attachment, that is the exact opposite of spiritual advancement. So one cannot be simultaneously on the material platform and on the spiritual platform. Or one cannot shift between the two. That now I'm feeling spiritual, and now it's time to be material. Doesn't work. That's cheating. Yeah, okay, last question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You said karma means activity or work, and karma yoga is to work to realize God. Bhakti yoga is devotion for God, which also implies work.
Yeah.
What's the difference between
karma yoga and bhakti yoga, very simply put, is that in karma yoga, one is attached to working in this world and offers the fruit of that work, or some of the fruit of that work, to Krishna. And bhakti yoga starts off with the feeling or understanding, I want to do everything for Krishna. So in karma yoga, one works according to one's desire and offers the result to Krishna. And in bhakti yoga, one acts only as Krishna wants, which may not be the same as one's own desire, but one makes one's desires fully, one subordinates one's desires to those of Krishna. And in this way one forget, when one has no personal desire of any kind and only desires to serve Krishna, that is the perfection of bhakti yoga. So, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.